Good afternoon. You are now tuned to Metro here on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. My name is Cal, going to be the host for this edition where we're joined by my guest, Joe Rubino. He's a staff reporter focusing on business over at the Denver Post with an interesting story that has been developing for months now, and none of us really know exactly what the outcome is going to be. So there's a lot of juice, there's a lot of complicated happenings that we're going to try and wade through and really just open up a dialogue with. So as you may be familiar, the Denver Post has been dealing with some ownership issues over the last decade or so, and we're really in a point right now where people are trying to figure out what exactly to do with the Denver Post. What is the future of this humble paper? So just as a little historical context, Frederick Bonfey and Harry Tammen initially bought the paper in 1895 for $12,500. At that time, the city had at least five newspapers, including the Denver Republican, the Denver Times, the Rocky Mountain News, and they all kind of served up their own specialty. There was a liberal paper, a conservative paper, etc., etc. But when Denver Post came on the scene, they tried a couple things that were somewhat revolutionary at the time. One of them, being very important, was that they decided to start selling ad space. Another one was that they decided to be essentially nonpartisan, which was basically unheard of at the time. Their mission was explicitly to deliver the straight news, and that set a precedent for the next century of journalism, where the media outlets at least attempted to provide some sort of non-biased exposure in their reporting. As we know, times have changed, and right now, a lot of it has so much to do with the consolidation of these media sources and who owns them and what their agendas may be. Right now, we're looking at a paper that has operated for 126 years being systematically destroyed by its very owner. So we're going to get into that now at a moment in time where most of the news is distrusted by most of the populace. So, you know, for decent reasoning, for instance, here in Colorado, our local ABC affiliate is owned by EW Scripps. Our local NBC is owned by Tegna. Westward is owned by Voice Media Group. And KDVR, our Fox station, is owned by Tribune, which very recently was purchased by Sinclair Broadcast Group, this being the largest TV station operator in the country. And they own more than 200 stations, covering more than 40% of American households. In the case of the Denver Post, we find that since 2010, the company was purchased by a New York-based hedge fund called Alden Global Capital, who owns 50 similar newspapers across the country, and it has a notorious reputation for hemorrhaging staff, eliminating resources, and basically making it really difficult for them to do their job. All of this has been amplified in recent weeks, especially in light of the resignation of the Post's former page editor, Chuck Plunkett, who stepped down amidst allegations of censorship coming from Alden Global Capital and them telling the paper that they weren't allowed to report on what Alden was doing with its financial holdings. So my guest today, Joe Rubino, was a part of a protest that actually went out to Alden's doorstep in New York last week, full of journalists asking them to either invest in the papers they hold or sell them. So right now we can get caught up with the recent context of what's been going on with the Denver Post and hopefully give us some insight on the shape of things to come.
Sure. So I was hired at the at a subsidiary of the Denver Post, YourHub. Alden bought the paper out of bankruptcy. So our predecessor, Media News Group, Dean Singleton's company, was in severe debt, and the bank owned a lot of their debt and sold it to Alden. And that's how we came under their umbrella. I started February 2015. Our first layoffs while I was there were spring of that year, 26 buyouts of senior staff, mostly people over 50 and those with 20 years of service time. So they went, and the following year, they came and cut 26 more jobs. The year after that, we didn't have layoffs until November, and then it was kind of a surprise situation where we ended up slashing eight jobs in November last year. So, we're pretty accustomed We've kind of grown accustomed as a newsroom to knowing that as budget time approaches, that they're probably going to come in and it's almost exclusively going to be bad news. This year, we were a little more hopeful that things would be different because they had instituted a couple other things to, you know, ostensibly save money. They moved us out of the building downtown, which we were renting. We hadn't owned that building in some time. We have a master lease on multiple floors there. But they moved us out to the printing plant, which is a facility that our owner owns, so rent-free. And then we had thrown up a paywall for our online content, which was something that we had had before, and then it kind of lapsed. I think it was overdue. I mean, you got to charge for your product. That's it's something that we had to kind of embrace. So we had these different mechanisms we thought to kind of insulate ourselves financially. And instead, in March, we had the most severe cut in terms of percentage announced since I've been there. So 30 cuts to roughly 100 editorial staff. It gets a little murky because we have some staff at a central design hub in Boulder. But yeah, they cut our staff by 30%. I was prepared for some cuts. I was looking around the room, like if we had to shed 10 jobs, like how would we do it? 30% was just an absolute gut punch. It felt very, just like you look around and like you wonder, how do we move forward from this? You look around the room and you just think of all the positions, and like at 100, we already felt that we were just skin and bones. And now to cut us so deeply, like how do we continue to, they have the same, pressure on us for online views. I certainly don't want to see the subscription numbers go down. This is what our owner is telling us is give us more. They're constantly bumping up the revenue projections and then investing less revenue in the operation. And it's just, it's become extremely clear to us. If it wasn't clear before, this year made it exceptionally clear that they don't have a long-term strategy. Alden's strategy for the Denver Post is very short-term, and it's to, wring it dry. And then if there's anything worth buying, maybe they look for a buyer or somebody to sell to at the end, but they'd be just as happy to take us into bankruptcy, wipe out our debt, wipe out pension liability. And then, if there's anything there to resurrect, then so be it. If not, turn the lights out. And that's what's kind of prompted, the response that you've seen since then. Chuck Plunkett the people he reached out to create that editorial special section. He was just fed up. He'd been there 15 years. As I said, it's become, clear to pretty much all of us that they're not making cuts to preserve us in the long term. They're not trying to get us into a position where we'll be sustainable. They're just reaping. They're harvesting, I think, is the mm-hmm. industry term. So that's what's prompted a lot of this response. And then the way that Alden and it's the company that owns us, DFM, their subsidiary, Digital First Media, the way that they've responded to that has, I think exacerbated the situation. Firing Dave Krieger in Boulder because he spoke out or attempted to, published an editorial on his own blog site. So now they've censored and meddled in our editorial independence, which is something they had never done. To be clear, we had never heard from anyone at Alden about mm-hmm. editorial direction prior to this. They had never said, this is how you'll cover this, or that had never happened. We were totally independent. That's the one good thing I could say about them, is that they never set editorial direction. And now they've undermined us on that front, which for many journalists, myself included, that's a red line. You can't come in. The business interest cannot interfere with the news coverage. That's sacrosanct. We report the truth. It doesn't matter whose money is tied up in it. And now that, so we're feeling a bit desperate. We're in this position where we feel that if we continue to be owned by this company and they don't change their ways, if they choose not to respect us and invest in the newsroom and invest in quality journalism, it's already undermined our mission in the eyes of many readers, and they need to invest or sell. It's plain and simple. That's what we have said to them repeatedly. And I think another issue that we have is that they don't talk to us. I've never met anyone from Alden. They don't answer the phones. Their website is literally a dead end. It's a website with no phone number or email address. They don't make any argument as to why they're doing the things that they're doing. There's no explanation to the newsroom or to the staff of where they're going with it. And yeah.
I think that's the interesting thing that happens with a hedge fund operation like this. They have very few people to answer to. As I understand it, they might have a dozen or two independent private investors in their different holdings, and those are the only people that they're answering to, as opposed to a lot of other publicly traded companies where they could be potentially embarrassed you could show up at their door and ostracize them and influence different decisions that they might be making. In this case, I think that it's really telling when the Denver Post put out their own documentary about the 125th anniversary sometime in 2017. And at the end of it, they showed all of the historic images of their different owners. And the final one was a picture of Alden's website, the dead end that you reach that says, you know, contact here. And it's a button that you can click away and never really receive any response to. So there is a lot of distrust of the media. And the public generally doesn't believe in the integrity of these institutions. And why is that? Well, I think that a lot of times it comes down to these types of ownership models where we have a distant owner who doesn't really care, who potentially doesn't have any stake in what happens at the company on a local level. The Post for many years was always backing all sorts of different local initiatives and events, things that an owner out in Houston or Los Angeles or New York would have no idea about. And it also comes at an interesting time where you might think that journalism is on its way out, but this company in particular is making extraordinary profits. Maybe we could talk a little about that.
Yeah. You know, the lack of accountability, I think, is absolutely something worth noting. You know, even the large companies like Gannett that are publicly traded, at least there's a investor contact number, right? Like, you can reach these people. Alden has no responsibility to anyone but their investors. Those investors are private. We don't know who those people are. Whatever insights we've had into their business operations have been gained from a lawsuit filed by one of their minor investors in, I believe, Delaware. And that's kind of given us some insight. They're not even sharing their financials with their co-investors. And that's a huge problem. According to an independent report, Ken Doctor works for the Nieman Lab, I think based in Harvard, and he got his hands on a financial sheet from Alden. It's hard to say what exactly is represented there. You know, those numbers without context can be misleading. We're not sure. But based on what we've seen to this point, the Denver Post and the Colorado News kind of cluster, as they would call it, for Alden, which includes a lot of papers that cover a lot of communities, Boulder Daily Camera, where I previously worked, the Broomfield Enterprise, another paper I worked for, Colorado Hometown Weekly, you know, Loveland Reporter, Herald, the list goes on and on. I think 11 papers in the state. We turned $36 million profit. Alden as a group reaped $160 million on its newspapers last year, a 17% profit margin, according to this sheet produced by Ken Doctor. That's double the industry standard. So they're cutting staff at a rate that goes beyond most other companies, and they're reaping profits at a much higher rate than other major media conglomerates. That, to us, again, is more painting the picture of their strategy. You know, it's all profit-driven. It's reap, 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 and never reinvest.
Because, of course, we live in a society structured around this capitalist model. So you do have to reap some sort of profit. But I think that what we're driving at here is that 17 or 19% as a profit margin is unprecedented, even within the industry. And it is possible to get a successful product out there and profit off of it and not kill it in the process. Joe and I both attended a recent event that was called How to Save the Denver Post. And it was a fantastic panel of some great speakers and some really interesting ideas. It was basically a community discussion forum where we were talking about all the possibilities and what has led us to this point. And it was an enlightening night. Right now, I'll play a bit of audio recorded that night from Chuck Plunkett. So we're going to listen to him responding to a question that was asked, or actually it was more of a statement. So the Denver Post isn't dying, it's already dead. And so this is him responding to that statement.
The reason that the quality of the Denver Post isn't like it should be is not the Denver Post's fault. It's Alden Global Capital's fault. That's the reality. That's why the editorial page did what we did. It was to say, look, no, if you're willing to be a newspaper owner who understands that if a newspaper isn't just a normal product, it is a quasi-public institution, it is something that because of the breadth of its coverage, because it shows up and it covers all the things that are difficult to cover, and because it does the investigative journalism that needs to be done, And because it does the fun things too, and the in-depth things, and the feature stories and what have you, that when it speaks, it has an authority. And it's difficult when you have an increasingly fragmented news environment to ever gain that critical mass to have that kind of authority, which can be so useful in advancing the public debate and in advancing just what it means to be a Denverite, what it means to be a Coloradan, what it means to like all these hundreds of thousands of people who are moving here, who have money and who have education and who have desire to live in a cool place, and you're robbing them of the perfect place to help create that identity and that sense of place. And that is traditionally been the local paper. If our owners were like John Weiss and willing to take 5% profit margins instead of 20% profit margins, you could have 120, 130, 150 people back in the newsroom, which was where we were when we won the Pulitzer Prize for covering the Aurora Theater shooting. When I go home to Little Rock, Arkansas, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, that's a state with much smaller population than Denver and Colorado, and they have a much bigger newsroom than we have. They have a better print product than we have. There are examples like that in Minneapolis and St. Paul. The paper that the DFM owns has, what, 70, 60-some people, and across the river, they've gotten 250-something people. It still is sustainable to have a big newsroom. It still is sustainable to do good quality journalism at that level. And if you try to start saying, oh, it's already dead, you're missing that critical piece of information to have in mind. I want to be libertarian. I want to be like in the market and believe that the market works and all that kind of thing. And I wish I could say, screw Alden. I'm just going to quit supporting them with my money, and then somebody else will have to step in and bring a product. But what needs to happen is that people who are considering doing that in Denver, Colorado, need to see that there are a whole bunch of news consumers here who are willing to spend money and who are willing to subscribe to places like the Denver Post and places like Colorado Independent and Denverite and the other things that are popping up to try to fill the void. If they see that there's an active news culture here, I still don't see why we can't have a big institution, whatever you call it.
That was Chuck Plunkett responding to the idea that the Denver Post might already be dead and that we should potentially be looking at ways of quickening that process and potentially rebranding something else. And Joe, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. For those just joining us, I'm sitting here with Joe Rubino, a staff reporter over at the Denver Post, and we're talking about the current ongoings with the ownership model and how this distressed asset is being dealt with. And first, I'd like maybe you to address the idea of why this is important. Why do we need a local paper? And to preface this, I'd like to just mention that we are a community of around 3 million people, potential viewers, rather, that the Denver Post serves. And doing it with a smaller budget than ever before and less resources than ever before. And it is the only paper of record. So why is it important to have a paper of record in a given region, especially such a largely populated region?
Well, I think the piece of tape you just rolled from Chuck gets to it, but that kind of having a central place for ideas, that forum of ideas where you can kind of build an identity for Colorado. I thought it was great when we had two papers. I'm from Denver. I grew up reading the Rocky Mountain News before it went under. And then you kind of had two different forums for ideas and reporters that were competing in a healthy way, mostly healthy way, to get stories. And I think, you know, once you have reporters that are motivated and well-resourced to dig, you're gonna end up uncovering a lot of the stuff that we need to know that we don't know. Because, you know, as much as like I want to believe that government's altruistic, there are things that they don't want to tell you or keep from you. But I think a daily newspaper, it has value in more ways than that. You know, the watchdog role is hugely important, and a well-resourced print newspaper that's going to print every day, has filled that role historically in America, and I think done a great job of it. And you know, there are a million pieces you could refer back to for that. But beyond that, it's the life and culture section, and connecting people with cultural resources and cultural events that enrich their lives. It's the sports page, where you can kind of build a sense of identity around teams. You know, Denver's kind of a city that's well-versed in that. I think Kyle Clark had made a joke that it would be easy to rally the community to save the Denver Broncos.
Right.
Maybe not the Denver Post, but certainly the Denver Broncos. And I think when you get to this kind of fracturization of the media that's happening, where you know things kind of spin off, like you go one place to find your sports news, one place to find your business news, one place to find, if you're motivated to do that, that's great. But when it's in one central gathering place, like you're confronted with these things, right? Like you want to get the paper to read the sports page, you can't not look at the front page and read this important story about how our child foster care system is broken here in Colorado, right? It kind of spurs engagement in that way. And it's really important right now. You know, we're facing so many complicated issues in this country, I think, to have that resource of information. So I think a daily paper, I mean, like, obviously I work for one. I believe in the mission. It does something that, you know, few other institutions can do in just kind of creating, like setting a conversation. So like, here is a big issue facing Colorado, and here's why you need to know about it, and here's what we could find, you know, through our reporting and digging to tell you that story. And, you know, I don't really see anything else on the market that can do that. You know, could it emerge? Sure. But there's nothing else right now, you know, and an editorial page, a place to share ideas where people can debate the issue of the day and in a curated way where they're not going to be, you know, telling lies or putting things out there that are defamatory or false. Somebody who can kind of curate and force the conversation to be within the bounds of civility and like actual thought. So, yeah, I mean, I could go on and on. But for me, there's just a lot of roles that a daily newspaper fills that there's not really another entity set up to do. And particularly when you're growing at the rate Denver and Colorado are growing, with all this influx of people and all this influx of money and all this influx of influence, I think you need a central gathering place for that to kind of be discussed and covered, cataloged.
It seems to me that the cataloging part is actually one of the most important features, because that's the really cool thing about a paper of record for a region. You can refer back to historical events and see how they were covered and get a lot of information that doesn't always come to light so easily in hindsight. When you're doing research into something that may have happened 30 or 40 years ago, a lot of times those papers are the ones who hold that knowledge. Their official reporting on it is where you can find the best account. So I think that's one reason that makes a lot of sense to have one of these institutions around, one or at least one, right?
So rough draft of history cliche, right? But exactly. The context that you gain from going back and looking at that stuff, it's hugely important. Right. Even the way a story is presented, right? Like it gives you clues into the prevailing mindset of the day. And at a time, like, I think we're going to look back on this time, this boom that Denver and Colorado have sustained over the last 10 years or so. It's going to be a pretty formative time. We're going to be dealing with the fallout, the tail of this growth for many, many years. And I think we want as much information gathered in that cataloging historical context role as we possibly can to look back.
Right. And especially might be important to address millennials. A lot of them probably have never subscribed to a physical newspaper. And if they do read the news, which most of them do, I think that a lot of them might not consider a newspaper to be a very important presence in their life, but that doesn't mean that they're not reading and sharing articles all the time from newspapers. So it's something to give quite a bit of consideration to when the entire country is reading and sharing articles from two main papers, right? Or three or four. You know, if the entire country is reading solely content from the Washington Post, the New York Times, or the Wall Street Journal, we're looking at this kind of frightening consolidation of not only ownership and power, but also of ideas. So as a journalist writing for a pretty prestigious paper right now, giving local spins on what's going on nationally and locally, where do you think the future of this platform might be going? Do you think that it's possible for a physical paper to be printing on page for the next 20 years?
You know, that's something, a discussion we'd be having under even a more healthy ownership situation, right? What's the future of the physical print medium? And, you know, the Denver Post has been online for a long time. Our paywall for online subscriptions, and those numbers have just gone up. Even in the midst of all this publicity, you know, people are signing up and they're staying signed up. They're not ditching those digital subscriptions, the online subscriptions, which I would argue is, you know, it's relatively inexpensive. And for the volume, even at our diminished staff size, I still think that's a good deal. But I think still a print medium right now still makes sense. It still makes money. you know, there's a significant group of readers, probably shrinking, but they're still receiving their news in a print format first and foremost. They're not ready to go online. But I think, you know, the idea of traditional news organizations going away to clear the way for online, right now we're in a position where we're actually generating some revenue that we, given the proper circumstances, could be investing into innovation, investing into more online resources, more ways for people to interface with us online, which we'd love to do. You know, if we had a brainstorming session in the Denver Post newsroom about all the cool things we could do online, if we were given the resources and the time to do them, you know, you would have a ton of ideas, right? People are always thinking about this is what we do. We want to present stories in a way that's accessible. I stick with the idea that you need a large, well-sourced newsroom to tell local stories. You alluded to like the large national organizations that people are reading left and right, and you know, they're doing great work. But somebody's got to tell the stories at home, and that's where it's drying up from the ground up, the roots up. You know, you're losing the local papers first, the ones that tell, like, even the ones below the Denver Post, when we're getting down more granularly to like small towns. And when there's no one watching those, reporters aren't getting experience working at those smaller organizations. It hurts the practice from the ground up, right?
Right.
Like, these people didn't start at the Washington Post, you know, most of them. I'm sure there's a couple savants out there that were just ready to go, right? But, if there's no Denver Post, like, you don't get reporters with the talent and the skill to go report on a White House if they didn't start at city council meetings. And having covered city council meetings, like, some of the decisions that impact your life the most, like, you don't like that gas station went in on the corner? Well, you should have been at the city council meeting. You know, that's what a local paper, a local daily provides, is that coverage of those, maybe, you know, in hindsight, like, little small time decisions, but they have huge impacts on their communities.
Right. And potentially pave the way for getting that process down, getting the tricks of those trades essentially down before you can move on to the very large issues that affect all of us. So we've only got another moment here to keep talking on this really important issue. I'm wondering if you and your newsroom has anything. We've been talking some doom and gloom and some bad news right now. If there's anything rumbling about the potential futures that we have, and also for the listening public who's hearing us right now, what are some options that we have to figure out what to do with our paper?
Well, let me start by two things that have really encouraged me, given me faith, hope that things could turn out okay, maybe not for the Denver Post, but local journalism itself, you know, will persevere. And I believe that because, one, the community has reached out to us. We hear from people every day that say, we value what you do and we support you, and we want to see this work out. You know, that forum on Tuesday, that was organized very organically, the How to Save the Denver Post. So people care. They believe in local journalism. They want to save it. And then it's the work that my colleagues are doing, not just the work that we do every day to produce a daily paper, which we still, you know, pour our hearts and souls into. There's no lazy people in newsrooms. Like, I guarantee you, you don't get any days off. But then it's the work that they've done kind of in their free time and behind the scenes to look at options, to come together with ideas. So what do we do? And there's, there are community groups that have reached out to us and they're talking. There's that seed money, John Weiss out of Colorado Springs, trying to put together some sort of local cooperative. And then we've heard from some other business interests, like, what can we do to help you, perhaps create something employee owned? So there is a future. And I think the timeline is short for Alden. You know, we got to get something figured out probably in the short term. And yeah, I'm very hopeful just based on the interest that I don't know what it's going to look like yet. But I know that there are a ton of people committed to making it work. And I have faith that something is going to happen for the benefit of local news here very soon.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy there and a lot of traction. So it's hard to exactly imagine what's going to materialize, but it's definitely going to be something, because people do love this institution. And that not only do they love it with an emotional element, it's something that I think a lot of people do recognize as being critical to proper democracy, the functioning of our society. It does rely on institutions that can do what the Denver Post has historically done for 126 years. So this is a story that we'll have to keep checking in with as time goes on. To all the listeners of Metro out there, appreciate y'all tuning in. This is how you can get to know what's going on in your community with your own community members.
And if you'd like to hear a discussion being hosted by our news director, Maeve Conran, Tune in tomorrow, Wednesday morning at 8:30 to 9 p.m., where we'll be hearing from national media types on these issues.
Joe, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.